Ron Van Dam, living proof that there is life after 40 for retired male strippers. Shake that thing, big dog, you still got it. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
I am big dog.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I am the person to whom they refer to in the title of the thing. Thank you so much for being here. This is going to be incredible. I say that even though I have no idea. Do you ever get up in the morning and say to yourself, oh, I'm feeling good, this is going to be a great day, and then by the end of the day you look back on it and you say, ooh, that sucked. I had such high expectations when I woke up. Then I went into the bathroom to brush my teeth, looked in the mirror, and realized this is not going to work out. I have met so many women who were like really attractive, can be centerfold models, that kind of thing. And every single one of them is down on themselves, where I'm not pretty, I'm awkward, I'm not pretty. Are you kidding me? You're a model. You're amongst the most beautiful women in the world, and you think that there's something wrong with you? And that makes me feel comfortable. Because often, really pretty people think that they're not good enough. They have to have their boobs done. Their ass isn't big enough. They've got a wrinkle somewhere behind their neck. They find these imperfections in themselves. And yet the people that have tons of imperfections, who really aren't very pretty at all, who are awkward, they're very comfortable. They're just very comfortable. It makes no sense. I don't know which one you are, and to be honest with you, I don't really care. This is just a talk show. I make a big deal out of it. Before we go any further, let me introduce some of the people that make this show possible. There's John Shanahan, comedy writer, funny, funny man. He does the introduction to the program, many of the comedy commercials and the comedy bits. And then there's Jason Shaw, who is a composer and performer of the background theme for this program, and Nicole Reed books many of the interviews on this show. Thank you so much. Nice to be here. And what do you do for this show? You listen to it. Yeah, well, that's very significant. That's necessary, so thank you. Well, it's what a wonderful day this is going to be, huh? Hey, guys. I was watching TV this morning. Commercials don't affect me at all. Television commercials are just something to fast forward through if you are able to do so. Many of the devices now that you watch TV on don't allow you to fast forward through commercials because they realize nobody wants to watch that crap. So you get up and you walk around until the commercial's over or it's in the background. Half the commercials I see on television, I don't even know what they're about. I don't even know what the product is. They get so existential about it and so fancy schmancy and so heady about it that by the time the commercial's over, I have no idea what the product is that you want me to buy. I don't even understand. It's just stupid. So commercials don't affect me. However, there are some commercials for food that do. And I see it doesn't. There's a spaghetti commercial. I think it's for Prince Spaghetti. And it takes place in the north end of Boston. Like, this is the only place that anybody can really have spaghetti. Anyway, the north end of Boston is a very Italian section, as is that area, the north end of Boston. And there's a little kid named Anthony. This commercial has been around for decades and decades, before you were even born, millennials. And there's this little kid running through the streets, and because his mother opens the window in their apartment building and yells out the window, "Anthony, Anthony!" And it's Prince Spaghetti Day. And when Anthony, that's this little kid playing in the street, by the way, what are you doing letting your kid play in the street in busy traffic? When the kid hears his mother call for him, and he's running because it's Prince Spaghetti Day. The kid I don't think the kid's old enough to have an orgasm, but probably has one in his pants at that time. He runs home for that spaghetti. And then there's a short clip of the family just twirling that stuff on a fork and eating the spaghetti with the sauce. And oh, that affects me. Now, what I do is I run to the supermarket. Do I buy Prince Spaghetti? No. I buy any spaghetti that's on sale. All you did was you made me want spaghetti for dinner. I did buy spaghetti. It's not your brand. I know, because I'm an adult, that one spaghetti is the same as the other spaghetti. And some people will say, "Ron, no, spaghettis are very, very different." No, they're not. No, they're not. They're the same. The dried spaghetti you get in a box, they're all the freaking same. So, Prince Spaghetti, all you're doing is like promoting me to eat spaghetti, but not yours. So, ineffective. But I did decide this morning, because I do have a box of spaghetti in my pantry. I have a pantry. And I also have spaghetti sauce, and I also have the Parmesan cheese and the meat sauce. And I got it. I got it already, baby. I'm having spaghetti tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I just want you to know, I'm having spaghetti tonight, and I'm damn excited about it, too. This image of me eating spaghetti tonight for dinner will follow me through the entire day, and it will make my day very special. And no matter what happens that's bad during the day, and bad things probably will happen, speed bumps in life, they're always there, I have the spaghetti to look forward to, and that makes me feel really, really good. Uh-huh. Yeah, huh?
Whatever.
Oh. I focus on the north end of Boston today for a reason. Most people don't really have a reason to focus on the north end of Boston, but I do. Recently, there was a news report that really caught my attention, because I live in the Boston area, the greater Boston area. Actually, if you live in Chicago, you're still in the greater Boston area. It's just like really, really great. I mean, it's just not the greater. It's the really, really greater. The radius has extended all the way to Chicago. Anyway, if you've not been to the North End, and nobody really has, if you don't live in the Boston area, there's a lot of buildings. Boston's very expensive real estate-wise, by the way. It's one of the most expensive cities. And the whole freaking state is one of the most expensive places to live in the country. I mean, this is not something you put a feather in your cap about. This is not a good thing. It's nothing to gloat about, by the way. It's sad and it's horrible. Anyway, I guess these brothers bought a very thin strip of property between two apartment buildings in the north end of Boston. And the strip of land was only about 12 feet wide. That's it, 12 feet wide. If you're familiar with 12 feet, that's not a lot of them. So the brothers bought the property, had a house put up on it. And the house is only 10 feet wide. I swear that's true. 10 feet wide. Do you know how skinny a 10-foot wide house would be? I don't think I could even blow my nose in that kind of house. So it's skinny and even not so deep. It's not a big place. Recently, it's three stories, by the way. I mean, this is one of the stories. The stories means, you know, floors. 10 feet wide. That's it. The place sold a couple of months ago for $1.25 million. $1.25 million for a 10-foot wide three-story house. I know. Because that's how expensive things are in Boston. It's unbelievable. But I am having spaghetti tonight nonetheless. And that's about it. All right, fine. Here's another news item that you'd probably find interesting. Yeah, this is weird. You're familiar with the space program. This has to do with infrastructure, by the way. In a broad sense. As you know, NASA no longer has the space shuttle program. We don't send people to the International Space Station, astronauts being the people, in NASA shuttles anymore. That program has shut down. Not enough business. I really don't know what happened there. So there's a private company called SpaceX. I don't know. Yeah, I think they could have come up with a better name too. I really do. But we're going to build rockets, and we're going to take them to the International Space Station. What do you want to call it? SpaceX? Yeah, fine, whatever. So anyway, there are four members that are on the at the International Space Station now, four astronauts that live in the United States, and SpaceX is going to bring them back to Earth in their capsule called the Dragon. It's the Dragon. These astronauts have been at the International Space Station now for nearly 200 days, which kind of sounds like a prison sentence, doesn't it? Sounds like something that the judge would say, you're guilty of the crime. Your sentence is 200 days in orbit. That keeps you away from the public. And you're not going to bother anybody on Earth anymore, so that's your punishment, 200 days off the planet. No, come on, 200 days? Yes, that's it. And you complain anymore, I'm going to make it 300 days. So I don't know. Anyway, the crew, known as Crew 2, has been at the International Space Station since April and spent nearly 200 days in space. They say it's been a very, very intense mission. Well, 200 days in space has got to be intense. A lot of things have happened, says the expedition commander and French astronaut Thomas Pesquet. You didn't ever notice that real French names, last names, there's no way to pronounce them properly. I'm saying it wrong no matter what. So they're coming back to Earth, and this is going to happen actually tonight, depending on when you're listening to the show. Maybe it's not tonight. If this is Monday, then it's tonight that they're coming back. The trip home is nearly 20 hours long. I don't know why. I don't know why it takes so long, but that's how long they're going to spend in the capsule before they actually splash down. They're going to splash down in the ocean. Yeah, nice. Here's the problem. Here's the reason I'm telling you all of this. They have discerned that on the capsule that's bringing them back to Earth tonight, that the toilets are broken. Are you serious? Are you kidding me, Ron? Are you kidding me? No, I'm serious. The toilets are broken. Oh, boy. All right. That's not necessary. So what they have in case of these problems, they actually have what they call space diapers. I know, this is getting weird. The astronauts that are coming back to Earth from the International Space Station are going to have to wear special diapers because they won't be able to go to the toilet in the capsule. Let me just say this because I don't understand this story. I did not know that when you're in a space capsule, you have the ability to unhook yourself and go to the bathroom. I did not know they had them. I thought everybody had to wear diapers in a capsule. Because you put me in a capsule and fling me around an orbit and hurl me back to Earth, I'm going to shit my pants. I'm pretty certain that's going to happen. People have shit their pants for far less reasons than plummeting back to Earth to splash into the ocean. It's reason enough to soil yourself. But I did not think that they could, like on an airplane flight, just unbuckle and go to the bathroom. I didn't think that was in a capsule anyway. But this is the story that I'm reading, that the toilets are broken and they're going to have to wear diapers. I'm sorry, I'm just reading the story. I don't quite understand it. There's a lot of things that I read and that I go through that I don't quite understand. As a matter of fact, most things I don't understand. Pretty much everything I don't understand. I don't know how else to put it. Here's something I went through recently. I don't know if you did either. I own a house and I own a car. And I have to, every year, pay auto insurance and house insurance. Now, in most cases, you have to have house insurance if you have a mortgage. You have to. The mortgage lender insists upon it. And they automatically take it out of your hide. Auto insurance, you're not supposed to drive the freaking car if you don't have insurance. People do, but it's illegal. So I have to have auto insurance and I have to have house insurance every year. I get something in the mail from these, and I bundle. I'm bundling this. I'm not just paying them individually. And that's not auto and home. They are now bundled. It's a bundle of insurance. It's a bucket of insurance. I bucket them. So I get this letter from the insurance company, and it goes up every year. If I make no claims, it doesn't matter. The rates go up anyway. I consider insurance to be monetary mafia material because I have to pay it or I'm in trouble. Whatever price they mention, I have to pay it. Now, I can go to other insurance companies and get a lower price, but then I'm paying for coverage that doesn't mean anything. So you got to be smart about it. But this is what I don't understand. I have to pay it. I have to pay it. It's unlike taxes. I have to pay taxes at the end of the year. I have to pay it. But I've earned money, and I'm helping the greater good through social responsibility. I have to pay taxes. But this is different. This is insurance. I can't say a word about it. I just have to pay it. It's like property tax. If you have a house, you have to pay property tax. That goes up every year through the rest of your life. Everything that seems affordable this year will not be affordable next year because prices are going up anyway. Insurance to me is just like weird. It's like, I can go through my life, unless my house catches fire and burns to the ground, I'm not going to get my money's worth. Anyway, that's the thing. All right. I have a very interesting guest coming up today in the program. She's a writer of children's books. She's written many children's books. I'm going to speak to her momentarily, whether I like it or not, whether she likes it or not, pretty much is more accurate. I have a fondness for children's books because, as opposed to adult books, because children's books come along at a time when a child's developing. And as an adult, I remember the children's books. They are so impactful in my life. They stick with me. Things that happened when I was a child stuck with me. They stuck with me. things that happen as an adult, I don't remember what I had for dinner last night. Because all the days are pretty much the same. But when you're a child, every day is a different learning experience. Something else happened that had never happened before, continually. I am learning so many lessons, so many life lessons as a child. It's more than a child can handle. When I grow up and I'm an adult, not so many life, there are some, not a lot of life lessons left. When you're an adult, you can pretty much look in the mirror and say, okay, I get it now. You can't do that as a child, because tomorrow is going to be another life experience, and you don't know what it's going to be about, and you don't know what you're going to learn, but something's going to happen. Something's going to happen that didn't happen before. An entire life of education is crammed into about 10 years of your life. After that, I'm good. Nothing to learn here. I mean, I'll learn little lessons here and there, but nothing like the big ones that I learned when I was a kid. Whoa, baby. Stand back. So, my guest is going to join us momentarily, and that'll be quite fascinating. But first, we've got to do this because someone has to pay for this, and quite obviously, you're not going to do it. So, do you like beer?
When you reach for a beer, what are you looking for? The finest malts, grains, and hops? An artisan ale that represents a modern take on traditional brewing techniques that master brewers have refined and treasured for years? A true beer drinking experience? Or, like most of us, are you just looking to get fucked up on the cheap? Well, if you're like the rest of us, congratulations, your beer is here. It's Fockenhalter. It's not a great beer. It's not even a good beer. It's a beer that's $4 a case, and it's strong enough to melt the chrome off a trailer hitch. So kiss your liver goodbye and say hello to Fockenhalter. It's beer.
Kristen Belush joins us now. She's an author, an illustrator, a designer. She does many things, and she has come out with a great book for children. Thanks for being with us, Kristen.
Thank you, Ron. So great to be here with you.
Pleasure. Now tell me, you've written quite a few children's books, I understand.
That's right. This is my ninth book, and I have a couple more waiting to be published.
Wow. Wow. You're just like churning them out, my goodness. Okay. Now tell me about what inspired you to write this particular book.
This book, I was gardening one day. I have a big garden. I was gardening one day, and I put a seed in the ground, and I thought, what are the things that are going to nurture the seed? And I thought the sun could nurture the seed, the earth, rain, all could nurture that seed. Mm-hmm. And then I came up with the line, if you are the seed, I am the sun. And from there, I liked the way those work together. And I just wrote a ton of different lines like that and started to pair them up.
Perfect. The book is called If You Are the Dreamer. And I understand the book is a comfort book in the sense that it helps children feel like they're protected and someone will always be there for them. And that's a very, very strong message, especially with what many of the children have been going through for the past few years. This couldn't have come at a better time, Kristen.
It's so important for kids to feel protected and safe and that somebody loves them. So a couple of the lines are, like, if you are the pilot, I am the plane. Mm. If you're the gardener, I am the rain. So that you have this benevolent force always taking care of these children.
Yeah. Hey, if you could write a book for the adult telling them the same thing, that'd be wonderful.
I get on that.
Yeah, because I think that they're a little confused about that particular point for themselves. But, you know, it's interesting to me that when you have kids and even when you don't, you read these books, and even though they're geared toward a certain age, toward children, they actually are also geared for adults. Adults can pick up a lot from that, and it kind of puts you back to a time where you were a child and these stories did mean a lot. And it just puts you right back, and they're applicable to everybody.
Absolutely. This book is really about relationships. Yeah. So we have all sorts of relationships and making sure that we know how to support each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a eternal theme of our lives.
Yeah. Do most of your books come to you in an aha moment?
I think there are different things that are kind of brewing for years, actually, before you write a book. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you have an aha, or maybe then, like, the way that the stanza came out was an aha.
Mm-hmm.
But it could take a long time, too.
Yeah. Gardening is a good way to have those moments, I suppose.
You have to make the room for them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now tell me about the title. How did the title come about for you?
If You Were the Dreamer is one of the lines in the book, so we pulled that out for the mm-hmm. title as a way to say that you could be anything, really.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You're also a designer, I understand, which is also another creative aspect. I think it kind of goes hand in hand with writing, in a sense, where you're taking something and making it happen.
Yes. Well, designing is actually a lot about editing.
Oh, so really?
You want to say something, you choose the color that's going to say that. You mm-hmm. want to create a message with shapes. What kind of shape would create that message?
Mm-hmm.
It's all about messaging.
I guess so. I was reading about your background and your bio, and I see that you're in Brooklyn in a top floor apartment, and yet you also have a farmhouse in the Adirondacks, and that's very interesting to me because I was brought up in the city as well in New York, and I always dreamed of having a place to go where I could change my head. Do you do a lot of head changing?
Yes. I grew up all over the country, and one of my favorite places was California in the Redwood Forest. So I think after living in Brooklyn for many years, I felt the need to get back to nature.
Yes, I suppose that is the case. Can you tell me what you're working on next?
Yes. I am working on a book called 1 Million Trees, and it'll be out March 1st. And it's about my family going tree planting mm-hmm. in Canada, in BC, in 1979. And we were with a crew, and we planted 1 million trees.
Wow. That's yeah. amazing. That's a lot of planting going on in your life.
Absolutely, yes.
And now you're planting stories in children's heads. So that's more planting. All right.
Yes.
What's the target age group for the book?
This is 3 to 5, but really, as you said, it could be for yeah. anybody and everybody.
Yeah, I think that the trick to children's books is having the adult with you for that. You're creating a bonding experience, something to bond over, and that's really the magic of it. I would think.
Exactly. This book is like a good parenting book, actually, mm-hmm. that reading it creates this positive parenting experience
yes.
with your child so that you become a better parent, actually, by reading the book.
Yeah. And again, the message of always being there for you is it's uncomfortable for parents to talk about what's going on in the real world under the circumstances recently. It's how do you approach it? What's too sensitive? What should they know? Am I shielding them? They're very confused, and this book kind of makes it a vehicle.
Yes, everything's couched in this really soft, yeah. sweet language.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, the book's available everywhere, I would hope.
Absolutely, it is.
And you
can find more.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
No, you must be in the Adirondacks.
I'm in the Adirondacks today.
See, there you go. I know it. Okay, go on.
You can find out more about me at my website, kristenbaluch.com.
Okay. Let me spell the last name, B-A-L-O-U-C-H, Kristen with K. And there you have it. Hey, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Continued success to you. And thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you, Ron.
Well, that'll do it for me today. Thank you to my guests. Thank you to you for being here. Be sure to take all your items with you. Don't leave anything behind. They'll get locked up and you'll never see them again because I'm going to sell them for a profit. So please take everything with you. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show, but until that time occurs, and I think it will, I wish you peace.